Right, we're going to continue in our study of David, and so we'll be looking to start out with in 1 Samuel chapter 18. Appreciate Brother Glenn's prayer concerning our growing to be like our Lord, and we need to be reminded of that as we think about David. We're reminded of the Lord's testimony that he gave many, many years after David lived there in Acts chapter 13, where he referred to the fact that he chose David because he was a man who was after his own heart, God's own heart. And we all need to have in mind that that is our purpose. That's the purpose the Lord has for each of us, is that we be transformed to have his nature. And so as we study about David, there is a tremendous amount that we can learn. And so we're going kind of slowly through this series of studies on David, and because there is quite a bit there. But in chapter 18, we'll pick up in verse 20 here concerning another event that happened to David, and we'll look some at that. Beginning in verse 20, it says, "And Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David, and they told Saul, and the thing pleased him. And Saul said, I will give him her, that she may be a snare to him, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. Wherefore Saul said to David, Thou shalt this day be my son-in-law in the one of the twain. And Saul commanded his servant, saying, Commune with David secretly, and say, Behold, the king has delight in thee, and all his servants love thee. Now therefore be the king's son-in-law. And Saul's servant spake these words in the ears of David. And David said, Seemeth it to you a light thing to be a king's son-in-law, seeing I'm a poor man and lightly esteemed? And the servants of Saul told him, saying, On this manner spake David. Saul said, Thus shall you say to David, The king desires not any dowry, but 100 foreskins of the Philistines, to be avenged of the king's enemies. But Saul thought to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. When his servants told David these words, it pleased David well to be the king's son-in-law, and the days were not expired. Wherefore David arose and went, he and his men, and slew of the Philistines 200 men. And David brought their foreskins and gave them in full tale to the king, that he might be the king's son-in-law. And Saul gave him Michal, his daughter, to wife. And Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David, and that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him. And Saul was yet the more afraid of David, and Saul became David's enemy continually." So there's a lot to notice here in these few verses. And also, let me read one more verse, verse 30. It says, "Then the princes of the Philistines went forth, and it came to pass after they went forth, that David behaved himself more wisely than all the servants of Saul, so that his name was much set by." So David had recently defeated Goliath, who was a very outspoken enemy of Israel and God. And we saw how David saw that reproach that Goliath had brought against the Lord and his people, and he defeated that enemy. But now we see a different kind of enemy that is arising against David. Here's one who is a lot more subtle, but he's also directly out to kill David. And so we see here Saul laying a snare for David, thinking that David was going to fall here. Now we remember back previously in verse 11, we had seen where Saul had cast a javelin at David before, and now we see him trying to think of a different way in order to destroy David. We see here in this passage that Saul knows that his daughter Michal loves David, and we see him willing to use her to destroy David. That really in and of itself reveals a lot to us about the heart of Saul here, doesn't it? When he's willing to use his own daughter against David here to try to destroy him. And so he makes this arrangement where he says to David that he will give him his daughter if he goes and defeats these 100 Philistines. Now, we also ask the question, well, who is Saul really fighting against here in all this? And, of course, we remember the Lord had anointed David to be the king, and we understand here how the Lord is working through David. And so when we see Saul constantly looking for these ways that he can defeat David, really we see him fighting against the Lord. And we're going to continue to see this from Saul. It's a very sad thing to see that from Saul. In verse 28, we see Saul realizing that after this victory of David's in defeating these Philistines, that Saul knew that the Lord was with David. And yet we're going to see later how Saul continues to seek to destroy him. And it notes there that he was yet the more afraid of David. And that's a sad statement, isn't it? Here Saul observes that, yes, indeed, the Lord is with David. And that causes him to be afraid of David. What should be our reaction when we see someone who is doing the Lord's will and who obviously the Lord is blessing the work of their hands? You know, that should be something that's an encouragement to us and that we want to go and be a part of and try to work with them. And yet we see Saul here becoming more afraid because of that. And later, in later chapters, we see him looking for more and more ways to go after David. We see there finally in verse 30 where it notes that Saul continued to behave himself more wisely than all the servants of Saul. And we talked about this wisdom that David had here, even at the very beginning, at a very early age, how this word literally is to be circumspect. You're considering, you're looking all around and considering all of the things that are happening as you are, and then you're making a determination based on that, what the right things are to do here. And so David, it notes, behaved himself more wisely than all the servants of Saul, and that his name was much set by. Now, through all of this, we also want to consider some things that David, other aspects of this wisdom that David had. One of the things here that we might not be immediately apparent, but we see here that throughout all of this difficulty that David was facing, that he was not judging Michael nor Jonathan, even Saul's children, based on Saul himself. We've already seen a number of places where it talks about the Saul and working against the Lord and his jealousy and so on. Now put yourself in the place of David. You understand that Saul is seeking to kill you. You know, it would be a temptation for all of us to sort of categorize his entire family in the same way that he looked at Saul and to say, well, I don't want to have anything to do with any of these. But we don't see David approaching things that way. He understood very well that Saul indeed had tried to kill him. Remember, as we noted earlier, in verse 11, Saul had literally cast a javelin at David to try to kill him. So David was very aware of what Saul was after here. And yet we see him behaving towards Michael and towards Jonathan and even towards Saul himself in a way that is very, very wise. And so we need to consider the judgment that David was using here and consider, well, this needs to be the way that we judge also. In James chapter 2, in verse 1, it teaches us here, he says, "My brethren, have not the faith of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory, with respect of persons." This word, phrase, respect of persons here, literally is with partiality. And it comes from a word that literally means to be an acceptor of faces. So the Lord doesn't want us to be looking on the outward faces, the outward situations of things when we make a judgment. He tells us here to not have our faith with respect of persons. We should not be judging in that manner. In Acts chapter 10, verses 34 and 35, as Peter was being used to go to the Gentiles, to teach the Gentiles, the Lord showed him a very valuable lesson that Peter then conveys through the inspired words here in verses 34 and 35. It says, then Peter opened his mouth and said, of a truth, I perceive that God is no respecter of persons. So again, we see this word that he's not an acceptor of faces. God is not looking at whether you're from this nation or that nation or what your background is. What is God looking at? Well, he points out what God is looking at in verse 35. He says here, but in every nation, he that fears him and works righteousness is accepted with him. So God is looking out amongst all the nations. He's looking at everywhere, every people, every race, every background. And what is he looking for? He's looking to see if we are working what is right according to our Creator. Of course, we know that that comes through his words. That's where right, that's where good is defined. And so our Creator is looking to see if we're doing that. And if we are, what does it say? We're accepted of him if we're doing what he set us here to do on this earth. And so we understand then how God is judging what he expects. In John chapter 7 and verse 24, as Jesus was teaching the disciples, he said there, judge not according to appearance, but judge righteous judgment. You know, oftentimes we hear people say, oh, we shouldn't judge. Well, that's simply not the case. When we look at the scriptures, we have commandments that we need to judge. And here he says, we need to judge righteous judgment. We need to judge according to the word of God when we look at these things. And we see David applying that kind of judgment here as he's in this situation where Saul is after his life, yet at the same time, David is dealing with different ones in Saul's family, such as Michael, and who he's going to marry, and Jonathan, whom we've already seen that he and Jonathan were very close and working with each other. And we see that the kind of judgment that David is showing here in these things. You know, the scriptures pointed out there that Michael loved David. And we note there that it was mentioning both of Saul's daughters, Merab and Michal. But it notes in particular that Michal loved David. And that alone, if we think about it, well, why would the Lord specifically call out that Michal loved David? You know, when he could have said, well, Michal and Merab loved David. Well, because there was a point where Saul thought he was going to give David Merab, his daughter. Why didn't it just say that both of them loved David? Well, it doesn't. And he noted here that in particular, Michal did. And we might consider, well, what's the significance of that? Well, again, what was she seeing in David? Of course, she was seeing the same things that many were seeing in David. They were seeing, as we've already noted many times, they were seeing a man who was after God's own heart. They were seeing a man who was blessed by the Lord in the things that he was doing because they were for the Lord. And so here was someone who saw that, and it notes here that she loved David. We also, of course, know about the bond there between David and Jonathan. In verse 1 of chapter 18, it noted there, it says, it came to pass when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. So here was Jonathan, who was looking at David and looking at David's righteousness and his desire to do what was pleasing to the Lord, and it caused Jonathan to love David here as his own soul. And so we see this desire from these ones of seeing one who was doing good and seeking good, where they loved that person. And it should remind us as well, as we're considering each other, what does the Lord teach us as Christians? Well, in Romans chapter 12 and verse 10, here he says, be ye kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love, in honor preferring one another. Note that word honor there. That word honor literally is the word to value. And so as we consider one another in the Lord's church, he says here that we need to, number one, be kindly affectioned toward each other. and valuing each other, preferring one another because of the values, because of the faith that we share. And we see that, as we were noting here with Michael and Jonathan, they're seeing this in David, where he is seeking the Lord and serving the Lord, and they are preferring him because of that. They're loving him because of that. And we need to consider how that's an example for us as well. But at the same time, remember that, you know, they were part of Saul's household. And David could easily have, you know, had a different kind of judgment where he said, well, I want nothing to do with the house of Saul. He's after me, and he's probably just going to try to use his children to go after me. And guess what? He did, didn't he? We just read about Michael where Saul was trying to use his own daughter. And shortly, Lord willing, we'll see where Saul's going to directly talk to Jonathan about killing David. And so, yes, indeed, Saul does try to use his own children to destroy David. And David could have just said, well, I'm going to stay away from that. I'm going to walk away from that. But he saw them for the individuals whom they were, as the Lord sees. In Ezekiel chapter 18, what does the Lord say about the parents and the children? Well, in verse 20, he says there, the soul that sins, it shall die. The son shall not bear the iniquity of the father, neither shall the father bear the iniquity of the son. The righteousness of the righteous shall be upon him, and the wickedness of the wicked shall be upon him. So again, we see God is accepting those who fear him and who work his righteousness. And so David's judgment showed that he understood this, and he was judging in that same way. And so we need to consider that this was an aspect of David's circumspectness and how he viewed and considered things, and how this needs to be how the way that we look at things as well. Remember, Jonathan was the natural heir to the throne of David. After Saul, it would have been the proper thing for Jonathan to have become the king. And Saul is later going to point that very thing out to Jonathan, that don't you know that David is going to take your throne? And he's trying to argue with Jonathan to turn against David. But, of course, Jonathan was a righteous man, and Jonathan wasn't going to do that. And David recognized that heart in Jonathan, and he loved Jonathan for that. Now, another aspect that we want to consider as we think about this passage that we've just read in 1 Samuel, there in verse 27, it noted that David and his men went and they destroyed 200 of these Philistines. Now, was that the agreement that he had made with Saul? Well, no. We realize that the arrangement that had been made was that he was going to destroy 100 of those Philistines. And of course, that was part of Saul's plan. His hope was that David was going to be defeated, killed in that battle, and that David would then be gone. Well, instead, we see David slaying these 200 Philistines, exactly twice as many as what Saul had requested. We ask the question, could David have slain more than 200? Well, what were the people saying about David when he was coming back from his battle? Saul had slain his thousands, and David had slain his 10,000s, right? So could David have slain 201 or 210 or 500? You know, certainly he could have. And so we asked the question, well, why exactly 200? The agreement was for 100. That's all that was required. But yet he chose 200. And we might consider, well, that was very obviously very intentional. You don't just accidentally kill 100 extra. Here was David going with his men to defeat these Philistines, and they killed exactly twice of what was required. Well, we might be reminded that David understood that Saul was the Lord's anointed, and David understood that it was up to the Lord to decide the time in which he was going to remove Saul from being king. Later in 1 Samuel 24, we'll see one of several times where David noted that understanding. in verse 8 of 1 Samuel 24. It says here, David also arose afterward and went out of the cave and cried after Saul, saying, "My lord the king." And when Saul looked behind him, David stooped with his face to the earth and bowed himself. So, Lord willing, we'll have a whole lesson on this later, but you know, David had the opportunity at this point in time to kill Saul. But David understood, well, that was not what the Lord had arranged for him to do. Yes, the Lord had anointed him to be the king, but it was not his job to go against one who the Lord had anointed as king, and that the Lord would take care of removing Saul in the way that the Lord saw fit. And so here, David is making it very clear. He's bowing himself, he's humbling himself before Saul, recognizing that authority that God had given to Saul. And how does he refer to him there in verse 8? He says, "My Lord, the King." And so we understand here that David recognized that authority. And he was very serious about that authority. And of course, we could have a whole separate lesson on authority, couldn't we? The obvious example that comes to mind is that of the parents and the children, right? But we recognize here that David, as part of that wisdom that he had, is that he understood the seriousness of authority and what that meant. And he was willing to give his life in service to the one that he was under. And he many times risked his life to do so. And he was completely unwilling to do anything against that authority. Here he had what seemed like the perfect opportunity to destroy Saul, and yet he chose not to do that because he recognized that Saul was an authority here. And so we understand then Saul, or David's view toward Saul, when we think about, well, why did he slay those 200 Philistines? Well, he understood still that he was serving Saul as his lord, the king. We can also be reminded of what some of David's own men did for him. In 2 Samuel chapter 23, we'll read verses 15 through 17. This is regarding some of the mighty men that were serving David. Here, at this particular situation, in verse 15, it says, "David longed and said, 'Oh, that one would give me drink of the water of the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate.'" And so here's David. We can hear, just hear him saying this. Now, is he giving anybody a direct commandment here? I want you to go do this. No, he's simply making a statement that said, "Boy, it would be nice to have drink of this water of the well of Bethlehem." Well, why is that? Well, it was because the Philistines controlled Bethlehem, and they were fighting against the Philistines. And so David said it would be nice to be able to have of that water in Bethlehem. No doubt that would have refreshed them quite a bit. And to have those Philistines gone would have been even better. And so he makes this remark. And so some of his men heard this. In verse 16 it says, "The three mighty men break through the host of the Philistines and drew water out of the well of Bethlehem that was by the gate, and took it and brought it to David. Nevertheless, he would not drink thereof, but poured it out unto the Lord. And he said, 'Be it far from me, O Lord, that I should do this. Is not this the blood of the men that went in jeopardy of their lives?' Therefore he would not drink it. These things did also these three mighty men." So here it's noting these three mighty men that David had, and he had a particular group several groups of mighty men, but these three on this particular day heard this thing that David longed for. And again, how did they view David? Well, they viewed David the way that David viewed Saul. They understood that they were serving David, and here they were showing how determined they were and what they were willing to sacrifice to serve David and in the authority that he had. And so they heard this desire that David expressed, and they said, "Well, let's go do that." And so they went and literally went into Bethlehem in the midst of these Philistines. It says they broke through the host of the Philistines. So they had to fight to get there into Bethlehem to do that, and to get that water and then to bring it back to David. And so they literally risked their lives and went in jeopardy of their lives, as David noted there in verse 17. But we see here the dedication, the faithfulness that these men had toward David. And we recognize, well, that's the same kind of mind that David had toward Saul in serving Saul. And so when Saul said, had that requirement for the 100 Philistines, David said, I'm going to go and I'm going to destroy 200. We need to have in mind that, are we serving anyone today? Well, certainly we are. In Colossians chapter 3, here he says, whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord you shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. We should be asking ourselves, as we think about this example that we see with David, in this case, David is serving, and we're going to talk more about this, Lord willing, in just a minute, but Saul is certainly not a very righteous authority to be under, and yet David is being very faithful in his service to Saul. And we should be asking ourselves, well, what about us? We have a Lord as well. We have a much greater Lord. And we should be asking ourselves, number one, do I view his authority? Do I put as much importance on the authority of Christ as David put on the authority of Saul? We should be considering that authority. And then we should be considering, am I faithful? And am I diligent to do everything that he's asking? But also remembering, well, what about David's men? Were they just looking to do the minimum that was required of them? Well, again, David didn't go command them to go get that water. They saw that that was something that he wanted, and they willingly went on their own to go and to try to fulfill what he was desiring. We should have that mind as well as Christians, right? We know the Lord is seeking good for us, and that he wants us to be seeking good and serving him. And so we all should be looking for those opportunities that he gives us to do good, because we love good. And we ought to consider, I want to do this for my Lord in his service. And as we continue on and consider a couple of more verses here, we read in verse 28 earlier, we said, Saul said that the Lord was with David and that Michal's daughter loved him. And then in verse 29, now again, Saul could have had different responses to that. He saw that the Lord was with David. What was his response? Well, in verse 29, we unfortunately see the wrong response. It says, Saul was yet the more afraid of David, and Saul became David's enemy continually. So rather than seeing the good and seeing that the Lord was with David and seeking David's good, Saul became his enemy. And it says he became his enemy continually. And so we see here again the heart of Saul, but we also consider, David saw that heart as well. And David saw that, well, I did good for Saul, and yet Saul is continuing to seek to do evil against me. As we continue on into chapter 19, it's not very long at all before Saul tries yet another plot against David. Here we'll read verses 1 through 7. 1 Samuel 19, verses 1 through 7. And Saul spake to Jonathan his son and to all his servants that they should kill David. So now Saul is becoming very open. David has been openly praised by the Israelites when he led them in and out of battle. But now Saul is becoming very open against David and speaking not just to Jonathan, but also to his servants that they should seek to kill David. So literally, he's asking his own son here to help him find a way to destroy David. In verse 2, it says, "But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted much in David. And Jonathan told David, saying, Saul, my father, seeketh to kill thee. Now, therefore, I pray thee, take heed to thyself until the morning, and abide in a secret place, and hide thyself. And I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where thou art, and I will commune with my father of thee. And what I see, that will I tell thee. And Jonathan spake good of David unto Saul his father, and said unto him, Let not the king sin against his servant, against David, because he has not sinned against thee, and because his works have been to thee word very good. For he did put his life in his hand and slew the Philistine, and the Lord wrought a great salvation for all Israel. Thou sawest it and didst rejoice. Wherefore then wilt thou sin against innocent blood to slay David without a cause? And Saul hearkened unto the voice of Jonathan, and Saul sware, As the Lord liveth, he shall not be slain. And Jonathan called David, and Jonathan showed him all those things. And Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as in times past." So we see Saul again openly speaking to kill David, but we see Jonathan here again fully understanding what a righteous man David was, and being willing to stand up against his father's wishes and pointing out, well, what has David done wrong to you? And he goes on to speak on David's behalf. And he points out in verse 4 how David's works toward Saul had been very good. And in verse 5, he noted this isn't just David at work here. In verse 5, Jonathan points out to Saul, it is the Lord that worked this great salvation for Israel through David. So he's really trying to show Saul here how, on the surface this is David, but it's the Lord using David to accomplish this very good purpose. And so, he's pointing out here there's literally nothing that Saul could use to legitimately accuse David of anything. And it reminds us as Christians how we should behave ourselves as well. Philippians chapter 2. Philippians 2, beginning in verse 12. He says here, "Wherefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God which works in you both to will and to do of his good pleasure. Do all things without murmurings and disputings, that you may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God, without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, among whom you shine as lights in the world." Here he's pointing out to us that we need to be walking, as he says there in verse 15, blameless and harmless as the sons of God. We need to consider our service to our Lord and being faithful in every way. And we can see that in David's example here. And so when the time came that David's enemies were actively seeking to destroy him, what did those who knew the truth, what were they able to stand up and say? Well, here was Saul's own son arguing against Saul, saying there's nothing that David's done here. He's only done good for you, and the Lord is working through David here. And at this particular instant, that was enough to convince Saul to change his mind. And we're going to see that it doesn't take long at all for Saul to revert back to what he was planning earlier. But at least in this particular instant, when presented with that evidence very directly by Jonathan, Saul realizes, well, that it's true. There's nothing. David has only done him good, and so Saul recognizes that. Well, we need to be the same as the Lord's children here. As he says, we need to be blameless and harmless without rebuke. And again, we all understand how we are in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation today, just as the Christians were back in the early days. We look around and we see quite a bit of perverseness in this world, don't we? And yes, there are those that are going to speak against us, but we need to have in mind that if we need to be walking as the Lord would have us to walk, that the truth should be that there's nothing in actuality to blame us for. In 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 12, here he says, "Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you as though some strange thing happened unto you." So he's noting also to us here that as Christians, we need to realize we're going to go through different trials. Think about what David was dealing with here. This was certainly a trial for David. He had only done good for Saul and the nation of Israel, and yet Saul was now openly trying to look for ways to kill David. The Lord tells us, don't think it strange concerning these fiery trials. Well, David had these kind of fiery trials. And the Lord tells us there in verse 14, he says, "If you be reproached for the name of Christ, happy are ye, for the spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. On their part he is evil spoken of, but on your part he is glorified." So we need to keep in mind that there are going to be times that we will be tested as well. And we need to be thinking of the examples the Lord's provided us all through the scriptures. In this particular case, David's example and how he was doing right. And when that truth was presented, Saul recognized that he had nothing that he could argue with. And come judgment day, the same hopefully will be true of all of us as well, that there will be accusations that are made and things that have been said. But when that truth eventually comes out, we want to be able to stand there on judgment day, just as David was standing here, and have the truth come out that, no, he did what was good. He did what was right in the Lord's eyes. And so Saul recognized that, and he was willing to change his mind in this instant. Now, unfortunately for Saul, that word didn't mean very much. And we'll see in another lesson, Lord willing, that Saul is going to continue to seek ways to kill David. And so despite the fact that he told Jonathan that he would not seek this, well, he didn't there for that few minutes, but then it wasn't long before he had gone back on his word. But we also see what? We also see David willing to go back into Saul's presence as he had done in times before. And once again, we consider how that is a test for David. Here was David seeing all of these things that Saul was seeking to do against him. And so Jonathan comes back and says, "Well, no, he said he's not going to kill you." And so, David could have just said, "Well, I'm going to stay away because I don't want to take any risk, or I don't want to have anything to do with this." But what did he do? He went back into the presence of Saul. Again, Saul was that authority that he was under at that time. And so David was going to continue to serve him to the best of his ability. And again, this reminds us of how the Lord wants us to approach things as well. In 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 18, 1 Peter 2 and verse 18, he says here, "Servants, be subject to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the froward." And that word froward there is literally the word warped or perverse. And of course, that certainly describes Saul here. We understand that David was serving a master. He was serving an authority here who was not a good and gentle one. He was one who literally was seeking to destroy David. Yet, David was willing to trust the Lord's promises. After all, the Lord had anointed David to be the king. And so David fully trusted in that promise, despite all of these life-threatening things that Saul was seeking to do against him. David trusted in God's promise that God was going to deliver him, and that God was going to make him king one way or the other. It might not have been, obviously wasn't very clear how that was exactly going to happen at this point in time, because Saul was constantly seeking to kill him. And so we see David trusting in that promise and being willing to be subject to somebody who was literally going after his life and had gone after it multiple times already and was going to continue to seek to do so. And so we need to keep that in mind as well. I hope none of us have employers that are trying to kill us, literally. But, you know, it can be very frustrating and difficult at times when we have difficult ones who are over us. And we need to keep in mind some of these examples that we have in God's Word that show the faithfulness throughout all of those difficult kinds of situations. So I hope we'll all be encouraged to consider many of these aspects of David and how he judged things and how he was a willing and faithful servant in all these things. So we're going to close here this morning. It's a good breaking point. I also have to head over to West Columbia here in just a minute. But we're going to ask Brother Dave, if he would, to come forward and lead us in a word of prayer.